3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Fourth Line Podcast, part of Full Press Radio. This is June the 27th, 2022. With you today is myself, Carl, and Stevie Nick.
And it's the off-season officially, Carl?
It is the off-season. I think that's really what we really need to spend most of today's episode on, is just diving into everything that this off-season has, because it's a big off-season. We've got a quick draft, free agency right after it, and then just a few short months, and then back playing hockey again in October.
Yeah, I think we should just like jump into our off-season content.
All right, so draft coming up. Who do you see going first overall?
Can I just say, like, I'm amazed by the amount of restraint you're showing right now.
Nick, my Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup last night.
Hey! Good for them.
Oh.
How does it feel? Let's start there. For you as a fan, a lifelong fan, who's been through them all the way from the lows to the highs, how does it feel?
Yeah, I was there when they were like peaked early and then bottomed out, as Eric Johnson said last night. And a few of them mentioned last night, he's like, I was here when we were the worst team in the league. And now we're not. And then back up at the top. It feels a little bit surreal. Like it doesn't feel like I thought it would. It feels amazing. Like it felt so good last night. And just sitting there, like I typically would watch the Stanley Cup like post show where like they interview everyone, and it like, oh, that's cool. But like, man, I was getting teared up just hearing some of these guys talking about, you know, everyone's got a story behind them and people who've supported them, who got them here. And I'm just like, man, I feel so good for these guys. It was great. It was fantastic to be able to celebrate. And they played an amazing game last night, especially, but just a really well-played series in general.
Yeah. And I want to talk about some of those individual stories and interviews later, but walk us through the last like 2 to 3 minutes of that game last night. How were you feeling? What was running through your head?
Actually, I'm fairly certain, and I was so locked in. I don't know how much it is, but I'm fairly certain my wife has the last 2 minutes recorded of me watching that game. Because I looked at her after the fact, and I looked at her. I was like, are you recording me? Stop this. just let me enjoy it.
Was it an incredibly boring record? Like, are you like super zoned in, quiet, intense, or are you very animated?
Oh, I'm very, even after they won, I wasn't jumping up and down. I wasn't like, I think it was like just cheered and then just like just head in my hands, just like, oh, like they did it.
Like soaking it in.
Yeah. And then just like, just the, probably the biggest smile on my face, just watching them all pile on each other and start to celebrate. And honestly, there is one time that the handshake line can take a pass. It really puts a buzz on the whole celebration after to shake hands. And then like you celebrate and then you got to go shake hands. I've never wanted that handshake line to be gone faster than I did last night. I was like, I don't need this right now.
Now imagine how it feels for the losing team, having to watch them jump and celebrate and scream.
Exactly. They're like, can we handshake first? It's fine.
Let's just get this done and over with, please.
Those last 2 minutes, I even go back further than that. The first message that I sent was with 7 minutes left in to a group of friends. With 7 minutes left in the second period, Avs were winning. I sent a message that said 27 minutes left in the game. I sent multiple of those throughout the third period. Pretty much every whistle, they got one of those. They loved it, I know. But with about 5 minutes left, I got very nervous. Colorado had been playing great, and they kept playing great. But I knew, I was like, Vasilevsky's getting pulled soon. And the Avs definitely, like during that time, they still got a few chances. And it, I think it was with what, two and a half minutes left, they got a scoring chance. Puck went the other way. and they pulled Vasilevskiy, and I was on edge that entire time. It was,
well, that's normally Tampa's time to shine, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And the amount of opportunities that they had was, I mean, fairly small compared to what you would expect, right? They had the 6-on-5. Turns out that there are certain times you are allowed 6 skaters on the ice. I wasn't aware of that. No one told me that was a thing you were allowed to do.
I don't think anyone told Jared Bednar either.
Right. If that's allowed, we should have been doing that the whole series. So yeah, just the way that they were able to stop them, they played an amazing game. The fact that Tampa had in a must-win game down, Tampa went more than half of the third period without a shot is phenomenal. For a team crowned all year as an offensive juggernaut, they'll just outscore you every single time they go out there. And we saw that they did, right? They had that 7-0 game this series. Yeah. But they showed who they are in all facets of the game. They can outshoot you. They can shut you down. And I'm very, very deserving Stanley Cup champion. But I'm an amazing series. Tampa played great. I think if it's... You do that series, it's going to go 6-7 games every single time.
It could have gone 7. I just felt Tampa, like, they ran out of gas. But let's go back. Let's go back. Last time we spoke, it was mid-game 3, I think.
Yes.
And that was a game that Tampa won by a score of 6-2.
Yeah, last time we talked, I believe Colorado was winning that game. I want to say, I'm just pulling up the scores from that game here.
This was the follow-up game to Tampa being shut out 7-0.
Right. So Tampa shut out 7-0 in game 2, and then they come back out and Colorado goes up early. I think it was 2-1 when we stopped recording last time. It was first intermission, stopped recording.
Yeah.
And ended up just being a complete blowout. The Avs didn't show up in that second period at all.
No, they did not.
And I scoreless third, but still a terrible game. And it was bound to happen. It was their first, it was a road game, right? That was the first game in Tampa. But we saw what Tampa could do. We saw their best in that game.
Yeah. Home game too. And as you like to say, series is never lost until you lose at home. And they won at home the first game that they played there.
They won at home. So let's then move to game 4. And this is where the series really tightened up. I mean, game 1 was 4-3, then 7-0, 6-2. All of these next games were incredibly close and fantastic hockey. I wish I could have taken the emotional side out of it and just watched it as a fan of hockey, because it was so fun to watch and such close games. As someone with no horse in the race, what did you think about those games?
I mean, game 4 in particular, really, I thought Tampa probably should have won that game. And then, of course, it goes to overtime. It's a coin toss, right? And we can talk about overtime in a minute, because I had some good laughs about that overtime. But as soon as Colorado scored that goal, I felt the series was over. I really didn't think that it was over completely. Like, I kind of felt Tampa was going to bounce back in game number five, which they did. They came back and they won. I think it was 3-2 in that game.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of teams, they go up 3-1 in the Stanley Cup final. It's hard to lock it down, but you lose that opportunity once, you're not going to do it again. So, and you know, I think even Rantanen, someone on the Avs even said that before game 6, they said, yeah, we had a little bit of nerves going into game 5 about closing it out and winning the cup. And I thought it showed a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, especially early, right? Early in both games, actually.
Like, yeah.
I think in game 6, they realized pretty quick that they couldn't do what they did in game in game four. So, or yeah. game five rather. So let's get to that. One thing that I've said probably every single series is that Darcy Kuemper will not steal you a game. You need to play your game and he's going to do his thing. Well, game four, we actually finally had a Darcy Kuemper stolen game, which is fantastic. Takes us to, like, he was the better goalie in that game by far. Vasilevskiy was mediocre. Kuemper stepped up, and it was aside from the 7-0 game, the only game of this series that Kuemper was the better goalie. And in a close, well-fought game, but then it leads us to overtime. And this is what I find extra impressive. I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. This became quite the touch point. We had Nazem Kadri scores the goal. And what I found amazing is last night we learned he cannot eat. His thumb is so sore and so broken still that he cannot tie his own skates. A trainer has to come out and tie his skates for him before every game, but it is well enough for him to score a goal on the best goalie in the NHL.
You can't write stuff like that. Like, it's so good. It's just like these guys pushing their bodies to the limits. Like, that's what adrenaline gets you.
Right. I mean, we saw last night, right? Found Lukushkin comes in, not even able to wear two shoes to the game. He wears a slide and a dress shoe because his foot is so swollen and sore. And yet, puts it in a skate, hops on out there, probably a cortisone shot or seven, and good to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and like, a huge for them to get Kadri back at that point. Not just because he scored. I mean, yes, he came out and scored the overtime winner. But, you know, he's been a huge part of the team all season long. Huge contributor in the playoffs, and he came back, and even still injured, he made a huge impact in that game, including the overtime goal.
Yeah, he wasn't, I mean, was not the same healthy Kadri, but amazing that we had him back. But the controversy that followed was the non-call of a too many men penalty, which Tampa did not, I have a biased opinion of it, but I mean, John Cooper even came out and apologized the next morning, right? I was going to say Tampa didn't handle it well. He came out and apologized for it the next day. So clearly he thinks he didn't handle it well either. Just the way that it came out. But in looking at that, what I found so interesting was, yes, do I think that there was too many men on the ice? Yeah. I think you probably should have called it. Do you agree?
No.
Really? You don't think that he was far enough away?
I think it was too many men on the ice, but I think that call, that play happens every single game. And to me, it's one of those things, when you go to ice the puck, are they always over the red line?
No.
Like, it's so close, it's not really affecting the play. So yes, I thought it was too many men on the ice, but I think expecting them to call that on such a routine play that they normally wouldn't is too much.
What I thought was interesting, and the biggest reason why I leaned towards a no too many men call, is just because the fact that there was not a clear, like, this is the camera. We have cameras all over the ice, and the most obvious one was one that you could literally only see the bench. You can't see what Kadri does when he leaves the bench. You can't see anything else. And so that kind of, the fact that we have like some stills of videos, not even the whole video, just here's a still of a video, and then that one bench video, makes it, I mean, you would think that we would have some definitive video evidence to show that it shouldn't have been a goal. But
I don't know how in this day and age we don't have definitive video evidence of everything that happens on that ice.
Right.
I mean, they have cameras in the boards. Like, come on, guys.
Alan, should they not just have, like, it makes it very easy for a too many men penalty, that just the top of the arena, just put a camera that looks at the entire ice. It's not that hard.
Yeah. That should be standard in every rink.
Yeah. I'll even set it up. I've got a phone here. Just make it work. Anyways, so that's game number four. You had a very important takeaway from game four though.
Oh, crying Cooper. Man, this I just thought was hilarious. Like, look, I get it. These guys are professionals. It's intense. they pour their hearts into it. But I think crying over a miss, like not complaining, like literally crying over a miss too many men on the ice penalty is the like least amount of things to make a person cry I've ever seen. Like, come on, man. How many times have you been through this?
The thing is,
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that's what got him out of everything.
Here's the thing though. Okay. Cause as much as I like to think that if you complain to the officials, it's going to backfire on you. Right. That's what I would like to think in my head, that the more you complain, the less they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt. But that is repeatedly shown to not be the case. If you complain in the media, you complain in the game, you start to make the officials slightly second guess themselves. We see it often, and I think it worked for them in this case. Tampa definitely was getting more calls, and I know, if we cherry pick every incident, it would not be there, but looking just at last night's game, how is that Darren Helm that hit on Darren Helm?
Oh, not bad.
Not more than 2 minutes. That should be a game. That should be a suspension. I don't care that it's the playoffs. That was reckless.
Yeah. Yeah. That was bad. That was very, very dangerous. Right to the numbers. The way his neck snapped back was like terrifying. They weren't even moving that fast at that point. Like they were up against the boards. There was no need. There's just no need for it. And in the regular season, that guy, who was it? Was it McDonough? Was it Maroon?
I think it was McDonough.
McDonough? He would have been gone for the game, ejected.
Yes, for sure.
And he would have got a call from the Department of Player Safety the very next day. That is dangerous, dangerous stuff.
Absolutely. And then on top of it, so he only got 2 minutes for that. And then on top of it, Stamkos shoots a puck at an official and just gets away with apologizing for it. It doesn't get a penalty. How is that a thing?
That's the star player treatment, baby.
That was wild.
Come on. If it was anyone, Corey Perry, Patrick Maroon, they would not have had that much mercy on them.
You would like to think not, but it was unbelievable. Anyways, game five, Tampa wins that one 3-2.
Yeah.
Colorado played okay, but just some bad goals. Darcy Kuemper had a thing of just letting in at least one bad goal per game, and they lost by one goal.
Yeah. And like, there's probably some nerves that come in there. You know, like I said earlier, that's what Rantanen said too. You got to close it out. You're a team, you know, full of players who haven't won the cup before. So there's probably a little bit of nerves at play there, closing it out. Tampa's pushing harder than they would have earlier in the series. So, yeah, I don't know. It didn't surprise me. I kind of thought Tampa was going to win that game, but I knew going into game six, like Colorado was not going to lose their chance to close it out.
Well, you mentioned, I mean, Tampa has so many players, right? Corey Perry, pretty much the only player on that team that hasn't won a Stanley Cup before. And then you go to the other side, the lineup for game five and game six, Andrei Burakovsky out. He'd won a Stanley Cup with Washington, but I believe Darren Helm, I think, is the only player who'd won a cup before. And that was a while ago.
I might be getting two players confused, but I thought both of them played for the Avalanche. Does Jack Johnson not play for that team?
He does. Did he win one with Pittsburgh?
I think he won with LA.
With LA. Okay.
In like 2012 or something like that.
I want to say, I mean, so many players listed him as one of the guys they wanted to win a cup for. So I would think not. Otherwise, he tricked the entire Avalanche team into thinking he hadn't won a cup before. It's like, no, guys, never won it. Win it for me.
Maybe. But yeah, like a team full of guys who had not really come close even, right?
Yeah. So that was, and then brings us to game six. Colorado goes down early again. Bad first goal, turnover in front of the net. Kuemper leaves five hole wide open. But just from that point forward, Colorado, and both offensively and defensively, just a masterpiece of how to score and how to stay in that game. And even so often you see, especially in the, like in a closeout game, that you see a team turtle and just let them, like, let the other team have chance after chance after chance. And even as the game was coming down to the wire, they were still pressing. Like, you saw guys, you saw like Andrew Cogliano taking a rush. I'm like, what? We got the fourth line out there right now. Maybe like just go for it. Maybe just dump it in and get the good guys back out there. And no, they trusted each other and they trusted what they could do. So it was good.
Yeah, I actually thought that Stamkos goal in the first period settled things for Colorado, because that game started off and Nate MacKinnon was like a firecracker.
Yes.
like he actually looked kind of nervous, but he was all over the ice. He was playing, I thought, a little too aggressively. And then Stamkos scored that. And after that goal, he in particular really seemed to calm down a little bit and refocus and get his head right. And the rest of the team followed suit, and it was all downhill from there. I actually thought Tampa had a pretty good first period, but in the second, they were completely outplayed by Colorado.
For sure. And I think it was Miko who was on the rush with him, but MacKinnon had a breakaway, and there was like one guy beside him, so I guess it's not a full breakaway. I don't know if you remember the play, but he went to do his like classic MacKinnon move, but then turned his back to the goalie and like dumped it back. And I thought that really showed like he was at that point locked in. He wasn't just trying to like do Nathan MacKinnon things. He was trying to like make the choice that has the best the safest opportunity, because it keeps them defensively in position, but also gives them a scoring opportunity.
Yeah. And then we get down to those last 5 minutes, the minutes where Tampa normally really shines and breaks through and you know, shows their no quit. And I thought Colorado just shut them down perfectly.
Yeah, it was good. So one thing that was missing last night, though, was the commissioner of the NHL. We normally, one of the favorite things of fans is to boo him as he's handing out the Stanley Cup, but not last night.
No, they didn't get to boo him because they waited till like the very last second to announce this, right? But it was as they were bringing out the cup to present it, they're like, oh, by the way, Gary Bettman has COVID, so he's not going to be here.
Yeah, just, oh, casually, which makes sense. Normally, you would have thought that instead of showing Hulk Hogan 18 times, that they would have shown Gary Bettman at least once, but...
Never even crossed my mind.
No.
Maybe no. I thought that I was looking at Gary Bettman.
Yeah, you know, Gary's looking pretty good. He's been hitting the gym. Replaced that kitchen table with a Bowflex.
He looks great with facial hair.
You bet, brother. So that was an interesting thing. I mean, Bill Daly also didn't sound the healthiest at the time.
No, he did not.
Like one guy's gone
with a scratchy throat, right?
Yeah, one guy's gone with COVID and the other one's voice sounds like he's just been cheering.
Yeah, just the two guys who are attached at the hip.
Yeah, they're
nothing to worry about.
Totally fine. So that happened. And then, I mean, the interviews after, I'd say most people's favorite interview was Nazem Kadri.
Well, yeah, of course, because, well, I don't know. I think that we got something special in Canada because of his history with the Maple Leafs. He knows the media guys here and right. He knew who his audience was when he was being interviewed by them.
Yes.
So, you know, we got a nice, we got a great line from him, you know, really shoving it to the people who thought that he was a, what was the word he used? Liability in the playoffs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love that in that exact, I mean, they, who is it? Friedman and David Amber were interviewing him.
Yeah.
They did not, I mean, they led him to it, right? Cause they asked about, you know, how does it, you know, what would you say to people back in Toronto? How do you feel after all this time? Right. Like they're bringing that up, but the fact that like that's on his mind was an interesting moment.
Loved it. And what a great redemption arc for him. But like, can we be honest for a minute? He was a liability at the playoffs.
Yeah, he was. And we all said that he didn't have to be, right. That didn't have to be part of his game. And he took it out and look, they won a Stanley Cup. Imagine if he could have done that in Toronto.
Yeah, imagine. Hilarious. Such a great interview.
And I mean, you just see, the one that stands out to me the most is, I think it was the very first interview we had, right? Gabe Landeskog interview. And he's just like, they're interviewing him and they ask him about his family. And he just like completely breaks down.
Yeah.
I was like, man, like that's the kinds of things. He's like, you just want to be a guy who that your kids can look up to and give them something to strive for. And I'm glad that I was able to do that for them. Like it's the things like that, right? And the ways that, and every team has these stories. Every team has it. I think Tampa, we probably would have heard less of them because it's the dynasty and they've won three in a row. But every single one, right? Devon Taves talked about how he got traded during COVID and didn't have things and couldn't go to the store and buy the things he needed. And the team just came together and helped him out. And they felt like a family. And that's why they are the way that they are. Story after story of that. And I could talk all day. I could just re-listen for the rest of the show for the last, 35 minutes. We could just play those interviews again and I would be completely content. So
the interviews are a highlight whenever the Stanley Cup's handed out. I love watching them every year just to get these guys' pure, raw emotion. Because everything leading up to this moment is stoic hockey, man. They will not break. It's the boredom. It's the answers. It's the process. And then as soon as they win, all of that gets stripped away. And there's just so much relief in their voices. But Kadri had the line of the night. Second one, I think, goes to Gabe Landeskog on ESPN when he was being interviewed. And I think it was Emily Kaplan was asking him. And she's like, it's a copycat league. And, other teams like to copy what's successful. And what do you think other teams should go do in the wake of your success? And his response was to go find yourself a Cale Makar.
Well, so Cale Makar, we'll get to some of those things later in the show, but Norris Trophy winner, Stanley Cup winner, Conn Smythe winner. Was he the right choice for Conn Smythe?
I think so. I was going back and forth on it for most of the third period because I'm like, who are they going to vote in? I really didn't think Colorado had one standout player, but if he had to pick one, it was going to be Cale Makar. Like as a defenseman to lead a team like that in points is pretty impressive.
Well, and I also did. I actually, one thing that I started thinking in the third period, I was like, who's going to win the Conn Smythe of Colorado wins? And I wouldn't let myself get that far ahead. And so I refused to think about it. And I had some folks ask me who do you think? I'm like, no, I'm not answering it. Talk to me after the game. But it is him, especially because it's not Stanley Cup Finals MVP. It's playoff MVP.
Yeah.
And when he is, I mean, he finished third in the entire league in playoff scoring. It's very easy to pick him as the choice as a defenseman. With what he did, I fully agree. Colorado did not have a standout player in the finals. It was a very, very full team effort.
Yeah.
And, but for the whole playoffs, yeah, definitely the right choice there.
Yeah.
One player that did not make the right choice, and I think we've all been there, right? I remember a few years back, my first game of the season hadn't laced them up all summer. Go to hit the ice for warmups, leave my skate guards on, fall right on my face like an idiot. So I think we've all had that moment where we slip, we fall, we make a fool of ourselves. Not all of us do it on national TV, and not all of us dent the trophy our team just won.
What's his name? Aubrey Kubel?
Aubrey Kubel, yeah.
Aubrey Kubel. Oh, man. I saw it happen live. And I think my face looked exactly like every other player's face on the ice at that moment.
I need you all to go find the picture of it. Oh, no, if I remember, I'll post a picture of it again tomorrow. I need you to go find the still or the picture that was taken as it happened. Because every player has a different reaction. And it is amazing.
Priceless.
It's so good. Because again, right? The pressure's off. They're all having fun. Some of them are laughing. Some of them are shocked. But I mean, no one's upset. It's just that trophy's been dented a lot. Let's be honest about that. But that was a big dent.
It was a big dent. It was very noticeable. Like that's going to be in their team photo.
Oh,
that's going to be on display forever.
Yes, that is a lifetime memory of him. He was a healthy scratch for the last few games of the series and showed up with the cup and left it with a dent.
great. There's a great interview. Speaking of post game interviews with the keeper of the cup, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was telling people that the cup is dented, and whoever was talking to him was like, but it's been dented before, right? And he was like, well, I think this is a new record. Nobody's dented it only 5 minutes after they got it. And he seemed like almost resentful that his work had already begun. They hadn't even left the ice. Yeah. And he already had to call the repair guy.
That's so good. Well, yeah. I mean, it was an amazing night. It just felt so good. And again, you mentioned the different stages, and we do have other things to talk about today other than just this. But I do want, I just want to wrap up this segment with just a few final thoughts, if you'll humor me.
Let's do it.
All right. You mentioned earlier, just like the stages of it all. And definitely like at the beginning, there was like just the happiness. There was like the tears. I didn't like fully cry, but like just, you know, a few tears in the eye. None of them actually like left the eye.
Just a little burning in there.
A little welling up. Yeah. Someone was cooking onions in the house somewhere, probably. I hope it was in the kitchen. I hope that's where they were cooking onions, not somewhere. But then after that Stanley Cup, as it started to wind down, I was like, hey, Google, I shouldn't do that because things will happen.
It's going to do, nope. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe ask how many calories are in an apple. So anyways, asked it to play All the Small Things. And just ran around the house singing All the Small Things. So definitely got to that level of excitement when that got put on repeat for a little bit. So that was good. And just, I mean, Nick, it is our last season of the podcast. And if you had told me 8 years ago that if I just stopped doing this show, the Avalanche would win a Stanley Cup, we would not have reached 8 seasons. If you told me that was the trade,
we wouldn't be here right now.
No.
Carl would be on a beach somewhere.
Exactly. It would be completely, completely fine. Yeah. So it is a little, I think for us, right? We just wrapped up the show. We're wrapping up the show. And to have this kind of a send off just feels a little extra special.
It is. It's, as we said last night, it's poetic.
It is. So thank you all for all the congratulations. It was nice even like waking up this morning and still getting more. It felt like, I mean, I know that those guys probably got a lot more. The actual team probably got a few more.
I think so, yeah.
I'm very curious what, I mean, I didn't think that on the road NHL teams, I thought they had their own rooms now. Maybe it was his girlfriend. Anyways, someone was taking pictures of Eric Johnson in bed with the Stanley Cup this morning. He like woke up with it. Apparently he was the guy that got to sleep with the cup last night. And so it was, I didn't wake up with that situation, but I woke up feeling pretty good.
Well, there's that situation in your heart.
Yes, exactly. All right, we're going to take a break here and talk about everything else that happened this week in the NHL. Three, two, one.
Okay, so we got to move on from the Stanley Cup now, Carl.
Do we?
Yeah. Don't worry, you'll have it all off season.
Yeah.
We'll have it all in next year too. There's going to be a banner raising ceremony.
That's true. We might have to have like an emergency podcast. I know we're retired, but it'll just be me.
Well, we'll see how many preseason goals Jamie Benn scores. Like if he's really on fire, we might have to do an emergency podcast.
We're going to pad our stats pretty hard to make sure Jamie Benn doesn't catch us.
But other things happened this week. For one, and for some reason, the NHL awards were handed out mid Stanley Cup final.
But unlike usual, it wasn't even all of the awards. There was what, 5 awards handed out that night? 6 awards?
Yeah, at an in-person ceremony.
But after the actual, like, not after the season, like in the middle of it, like you said, it was just very strange.
It was weird. It was like between game 3 and 4 or 4 and 5 or something. Did you watch it?
No, I didn't even know it was on until like I saw a few weird tweets happening and I was like, what? Is this? No,
same.
There's not an awards thing tonight. And then just like I started seeing like lists of not award winners coming out. Apparently there is an award show.
Yeah, I had no idea.
They could not have done a worse job of advertising it.
I honestly, it doesn't matter. They don't need it. Like they announced the other awards before. Just, I assume it was online. Maybe they did something live on the pregame show before the game started. Why can't they just do all the awards like that? Why do they need a ceremony?
Yeah, it's very unnecessary.
Nobody cares.
No one cared at all. Actually, you know what was, so as much as that was like kind of weird and confusing about the fact that, I mean, I didn't watch it because I couldn't, or because I like didn't know what was on. But you know what was even more frustrating? Did you watch that Unrivaled documentary we were so excited about seeing?
No, I didn't. Did you?
No, because it's not broadcast in Canada.
So frustrating.
Why? Why would you do that? You release it the afternoon before a game day and no one in Canada can watch it? Do you realize how, especially the fact that it was like an ESPN documentary, TSN should have canceled whatever, like, they didn't have five things. They've got five channels on TSN. There was not five things on. I'm sure it was golf. I know the NASCAR race was on. There was probably tennis. And somehow they probably had June curling on TV. And yet none of the much, much wanted documentary.
So frustrating. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I have to watch it.
We're going to have to find a way for sure.
We'll find a way.
All right, so let's talk some of these awards. I mentioned it already. Cale Makar winning the Norris. And this was the most controversial of all the awards.
Why we got to start with Cale Makar for? We just talked about the Avalanche for like 30 minutes.
Yeah, I'm well aware.
All right, go ahead.
Look, go ahead. When your team wins the Stanley Cup, we can start with your team's player.
I can't wait to talk about my team's player last when we have no time left in the podcast. We have to rush it. But no, go on, Carl. Talk about Cale Makar some more.
Cale Makar, winner of the trophy of best defenseman in the league, beating out Victor Hedman and Roman Josi. And I would agree, better defenseman than Victor Hedman this year. I was surprised that he took it over Roman Josi.
I was very surprised about that too. I thought Josi should have won that. He was a better defenseman last year.
And what we saw in the end was that because the Hockey Writers Association releases all of the votes, which I do really appreciate the transparency with that, and a level of accountability. But you had five votes. So you listed a top five defensemen, you ranked them 1 to 5. And there were people that, and this is why he didn't win it, there was people who did not put Roman Josi as their top five defenseman. And that is ridiculous.
It's crazy. It makes no sense.
So I'm sorry, Roman, that you lost because apparently some people think you're the sixth or worst defenseman in the NHL. But you should have won that award.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. More points, more offensive, not by much, but more offensive and better defensively, I thought. But like, do you think that, because here's what runs through my head when I see results like this. This is voted on by members of the media, including local media coverage.
I mean, almost exclusively local media coverage. Most of the Professional Hockey Writers Association are local beat writers covering teams.
So when I hear that, you know, there were X amount of people who didn't have him in the top five, to me, I'm just thinking like, oh, that's because like the LA person put Drew Doughty in there, or the, you know, whoever else person put their local top four defenseman in there. I don't know if there's any truth to that.
Yeah.
But no, I very much feels agree. Like there's probably some bias playing into these things. It's kind of unfair when it comes to voting.
Yeah. And I think one of the guys that kind of stood out and was open and vocal about it, why, and kind of explained it, I believe he's from Chicago. So it's not like you could even use the like not in the same division, East Coast bias kind of thing, which I think definitely is a thing in a lot of these awards. Because Josi and Makar are in the same division as the Blackhawks. So,
right.
All right. Then let's see. We've got three other awards to talk about. I guess you mentioned we should save the Calder for last. So we'll do that.
I didn't even mention that. I didn't say anything about the Calder Trophy. That's the first time I've said that word.
You just said that when we talk about your team, it would get saved for the end. So I thought you wanted to save it for the end.
Okay. So what do you want to talk about? The Vezina?
Sure. Let's talk about the Vezina. Igor Shesterkin winning the Vezina, beating out Jacob Markstrom and UC Saros, which is wild that Andrei Vasilevskiy not even nominated for this award.
Yeah. None of this is surprising. Shesterkin probably should have won the Hart Trophy too. Let's move on. What's the next one?
Next is the Hart Trophy. Hart Trophy went to Austin Matthews. He beat out Igor Shesterkin, which you just said that he should have won, and Connor McDavid.
I said he probably should have won. All of the, you can make a case for all of those guys. I'm not upset that Austin Matthews won.
Yeah, I find it very interesting, like the goalie premise. I think if you were to genuinely give the Hart Trophy to the most valuable player, a goalie would win that award every single year for the most part. It would either be a goalie or Connor McDavid. It's one of the two of them.
Or Austin Matthews, apparently.
Or apparently Austin Matthews.
But don't you think that the Rangers wouldn't have been where they were this year if it were not for that goalie?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, I think if we genuinely look at the most valuable player and not the most talented player this year.
This year. Okay. Specifically this year.
Yeah. Right. Or like most outstanding player. I think if this was a most outstanding player award, sure. But it becomes the fact of like that some treat it as most outstanding, some treat it as most valuable. It kind of becomes a real muddled thing.
I agree.
But on the other hand, the players have their own award where they vote on who they think is the most outstanding player in the league. And the nominees for that were Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, and Roman Josi. And Austin Matthews took that one. I think that speaks pretty clearly to how he's considered in the league and how his fellow players thought about his season.
I mean, that one's almost more prestigious than the Hart, right? Like, what does he care what a bunch of reporters think?
Yeah.
Of his game. Like, to me, what would be more important is what do my peers and colleagues and, you know, opponents think of me?
Right. The guys who go against me every single night, and they go against these other two, right? They're shooting on Shesterkin. They're having to defend Connor McDavid. And they said that he had the most outstanding season. So,
yeah. Yeah. Not upset about either of those. I think those are, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, I think Austin Matthews did have, I mean, I don't think, I know he had a great season. I definitely think he's a worthy recipient of that award. And that brings us to the end of the show.
Oh, are we finally going to wrap up early?
Why not?
Finally going to end one early?
No, Nick. The Calder Trophy to Rookie of the Year went to Moritz Seider of your Detroit Red Wings beating Michael Bunting and Trevor Zegras.
Yeah.
The floor is yours.
Very, very, very well deserved. And it wasn't even close. Someone had unanimous votes. I don't remember if it was Seider or not, but it was overwhelmingly him that was voted for. And he comes into Detroit on a terrible team. And he establishes his presence against some of the best players in the league. Because Detroit didn't have a top two that he wasn't a part of. So he got matched up against Sidney Crosby, and he got matched up against Austin Matthews, and he got matched up against Connor McDavid, and he held his own. And he scored 50 plus points, and he defended great, and he deserved it.
Well, and I think it speaks to the fact that you mentioned how much of a blow it was. I'm surprised that Michael Bunting was on there because he like played with most outstanding player Austin Matthews for much of the season on that line. I honestly think Lucas Raymond should have been up there. I think there should have been two Red Wings there because they had two amazing seasons. Both of them were great. Seider was consistent. He kept it going the whole year. Raymond definitely had some ebbs and flows to his year. So I get that. But I mean, this is... The Colorado Avalanche started this whole thing with a defense of winning the Calder.
That is a very good parallel that you're drawing there, Carl. I like that parallel a lot.
I would think so.
I like that a lot. I'm looking because I've been telling people this all week and I'm just realizing I don't know if it's true or not. So before I say it on the podcast, I was off by 10 years. The last time a Detroit Red Wing won the Calder Trophy was in 1965. And it was, his name was Roger Crozier.
That sounds fake, but okay.
It's true. It's just, I've been telling people it's 1956. So,
okay. Still a while.
Still, it's pretty impressive for cider. I'm very happy to have him. I'm very happy that he's part of my team. I'm very happy that, you know, the takes that I had when he was drafted about it being mediocre and kind of a stretch have been proven wrong.
Yes, it's one time that you're always okay being wrong about one of those takes.
Absolutely. So can't wait to see what he brings to the table next year.
Yeah, it's going to be good. All right, and that wraps up the NHL Awards. We're off to the off season now. It's officially here, right?
Yeah.
We had some coaches continually looking at the coaching moves that are happening around the NHL. Winnipeg Jets have some news about their head coaching search. Actually, well, how many things have happened? Because we did not talk about
Paul
Maurice, didn't we? We missed one, right? Winnipeg Jets. Paul Maurice left them last year, just kind of stepped aside, bowed out. And so they're on the search for a coach, but they found out not who their coach is, but more so who it won't be.
Yeah, no kidding. I think probably had an offer out to Barry Trotz. And he informed them that he wouldn't be coaching next year at all for anyone.
Which I think that's more of a blow for the Red Wings. That would have been a great fit for Calder Trophy winner Moritz Seider to have Barry Trotz there. But nonetheless, surprising that he's done it long enough. If he wants to take a year off or forever off, go for more. It.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't ruled out coming back. He's just taking some time to spend time with his family, which, you know, he's at that point of his life where he can do. Absolutely. I'm just kind of surprised.
Yeah, me too. Also surprising. I was both surprised and not surprised. I was surprised with who? Paul Maurice went to the Florida Panthers, replacing technically interim coach Andrew Brunette, who led them to a President's Trophy and to a sweep of the Tampa by at the hands of the Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs. Paul Maurice goes from Winnipeg to Florida. I think Maurice will do a fine job there. It just, when I looked at what Florida does, and they have a lot of exciting players and a lot of great talent, and I look at what he did in Winnipeg, I just feel like he didn't get the most excitement out of that Winnipeg Jets team. And I hope he doesn't do the same thing in Florida.
Yeah, but this Florida Panthers team is more exciting than that Winnipeg Jets team was. Like right? It's objectively a level above that team.
I would say so. Yeah.
I think there's some players on that team who are so incredibly creative that they're going to be a fun team to watch regardless.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I very much do.
But can we talk about replacing the coach that brought home the President's Trophy?
Yes, we can. Who was a Jack Adams nominee?
Who was a Jack Adams nominee?
Yeah,
I was surprised at first when I heard it.
Yeah, it really just seems like giving up too early. Again, if you're basing that solely on what happened in the playoffs, when team after team, right? Tampa got taken to 7 games in the first round of the playoffs. Sure, Florida did too. No, or did they win in 6? I'm trying to remember now.
I don't remember, but you're talking about the Washington Capitals versus the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's a huge difference.
Okay, fine. Yes, fair.
6 or 7, like Florida should have had them done in 4.
Okay. And then swept by Tampa, who eventually went on to win the conference, right? But if you're looking at that set of games, a front offices do this all too much, where they look at the playoffs and use that as their main metric. And I get that that's the most recent and that's the most high pressure, but it's also a small set of games. Florida won 4 out of 10 games. Every team's going to go through a stretch like that, especially when you're playing top talent.
See, I don't disagree, but I think the playoffs is so much more of a coaching matchup than the regular season is. Like, coaching is so much more important in the playoffs. And I think that's where it seemed like he was exposed because he was outcoached by the Capitals. I can't even think of who their coach is right now. Anyways, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. That team, like the Panthers are so much better than the Capitals. They should not be taken to 6 or 7 games. The Lightning, I think he was completely outcoached. Like, he couldn't get his team to score on the power play. They were shut down completely.
And we saw what a good power play can do against Tampa, right? Tampa's power play was not great in the finals. So
if you're thinking, like, it doesn't matter, any coach can get us to the playoffs, because the regular season is such a long haul. We know our team's good enough. You're not playing the same team over and over and over and over and over again to the point where they're learning your systems and you have to adjust them. They're looking for somebody who can coach them through the playoffs.
Absolutely. Third coaching announcement of the week, Luke Richardson. Last week we talked about Ryan Huska, a name that we knew nothing about. And I read to you in pretty essentially perfect French, that article about him.
Yeah.
We can forget all of that because he was not actually hired as the head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks. He said he was rumored, was likely to. Luke Richardson actually announced as the head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks today.
I feel like this was the boring coach news of the week.
Yes.
Like, this is not interesting to me. Like, Luke Richardson's just been an assistant coach basically his entire career so far, except for those like 3 games in the playoffs.
Did he get a few? Yeah.
Remember their coach got COVID in the bubble?
That's right. And he took over as the head coach.
Yeah. Maybe it wasn't the bubble. I don't remember. But anyways, when their coach got COVID, he had to step in.
Yes.
That's where I know his name from.
And then they fired the coach. And then instead of hiring Luke Richardson, they went and hired Pee-wee coach Martin St-Louis.
That's right.
So that tells you what Montreal thought about him.
Well, we know Chicago's not trying to win.
Right, exactly. Very true.
Like, literally every player's on the trade market right now.
Yeah, and Montreal showed that they can do a pretty good job of not winning. So
yeah, so maybe he's your guy.
All right, that's it. That's the news of the week. Do you want to talk high sticking?
Yeah, I want to hear about the results.
Very, very excited. And I know that I should have. I haven't done last night's game yet. I was a little bit busy celebrating, but it also became quite irrelevant because Brody, who lost a tiebreaker before, had already locked up the title. And actually, before that game was even done, so he locked it up going into the game. So no matter what happened, Game 6 and 7, he'd already won. He had a 7-point lead going into that game, so I reached out to him. Before that game was done, already had his jersey off to him. He picked a great choice, Ottawa Senators fan. However, great choice in jerseys. He went with the classic green Hartford Whaler jersey.
Nice. Good for him. I thought as a Senators fan, he would have picked Alfredson in Detroit.
Ooh, that's the thing we forgot to talk about tonight. We'll talk about that later. Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I know. When you said Senators, I thought about that. Yeah. But hey, good for Brody, because he's been after it all year. And he lost that tiebreaker.
He has, and he's been up there. I think if we were to do cumulative points for the season, he would be for sure number one. So was glad that he managed to get the win. And thank you to everyone for playing. Thank you for playing all season and all seasons. It's been a lot of fun and a great way to just connect and talk about what's happening every day in the NHL.
Well, and you know what? Thank you, Carl, on behalf of all of our listeners. Because if you guys don't know, I know that that account doesn't have anyone's name on it. But it's not me who's in there running high sticking every week. Every day.
That's true.
That is all Carl. And you did a great job, Carl.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So a little schedule update for you.
Yes.
You all know that we are coming to the end of the show. After tonight, we actually thought there was a legitimate chance. I would say, for myself, about a 30% chance that tonight was the last episode of the podcast. It just felt so right.
Yeah.
But it's not. So next Monday, July 4th, we're going to be too busy letting Americans celebrate their independence that day. We're going to not do an episode that day. Okay. July 7th. So that's next Thursday. That is day one of the NHL draft. We are going to do an episode during the draft that night. Okay, so we're going to be doing an episode July 7th.
Which I think we did last year too, by the way.
I think so. Yeah. Sounds familiar. Okay. So then because we've done one on the 7th, we're going to skip the 11th, fast forward to July 18th. The 13th of July is free agency day. So that 18th is going to be our free agency recap. We're going to talk about all the big signings, all the big moves, give it some time to let more trickle in as the days go on. Talk about that on the 18th. Then July 25th is the series finale, show finale, final episode ever, unless Jamie Benn is a jerk, of the Fourth Line Podcast.
And that date again was?
July 25th.
There it is.
So we have three more episodes coming your way. And I mean, there's going to be so much to talk about. Draft and everything leading up to it. Who knows what trades will happen. Some contracts signed, some extensions given out to RFAs, etc. leading up. Someone will be traded to somewhere. So
some more coaches need to be hired.
Right? Some more coaches. Winnipeg still needs someone. Detroit still needs someone. So there will be a ton to talk about. We will have a lot. The exact same thing that you've come to know for those next two episodes. And then the last episode is going to be a good one.
I think so too. We're going to have some fun.
It's fun. It's our time to celebrate everything that we've all done together. So,
yeah. So that's it. That's it for tonight, right?
That is it for tonight.
Thank you everyone for listening. If you want to talk to us, you can find us on the socials at the Fourth Line Podcast. If you want to write to us and tell us how much you love us, it's mail at the Fourth Line Podcast.com. If you want to write to us and tell us how much you hate us, it's trash at the Fourth Line Podcast.com. Don't send us that. At this point, we don't want to hear it. And that's all we have for tonight, right, Carl?
I did prepare a little something.
Oh, you prepared something to sign us off on?
I did. Can I share?
Let's hear it.
All right. La 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 la. All the Avs things, true joy, cup brings, you'll take one lift, your win, best trip. Always, you know, I'll be at your game, watching, waiting, celebrating. Look at them, Joe, they put on a show, take the cup home. Colorado, Gabriel, Nathan, and Miko Rantanen, Kyle Makar, Tavares, Darcy Kemper, Gerard, Byram, Nakushkin, Burakovsky, na 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 Nazem. Game night, come home, deep pucks, you know, you left me cheering and in tears. Your first time in 21 years. Look at them, Joe. They put on a show. Take the cup home, Colorado.